Hello and welcome to the Sapiens Insurance 360 podcast. I'm your host, Jiffy Thomas, Vice President and Head of MPL Practice here at Sapiens. And I'm so pleased that you're out there listening. This is where we discuss the latest news, trends, and issues from across the insurance solution and technology spectrum. In the global diverse world of insurance, medical professional liability insurance may not be the first sector that comes to mind. But of course, that doesn't mean that MPL insurance does not have a long-standing history and a significant market of its own. Also known as medical malpractice insurance, MPL insurance became more standardized in the early 20th century as healthcare practices evolved. Heavy premium increases, tort reforms, including indemnity caps, and consolidation among insurers and healthcare providers have just been some of the highlights in the past 50 years. Today, the MPL industry continues to adapt to changing healthcare environments, legal frameworks, and medical practices, while diversifying in terms of risk management services, new coverage lines, mergers and acquisitions, and a lot more. With us today to speak to the MPL's ongoing diversification journey is Bill Burns, who's a Vice President of Research at the MPL Association. Prior to joining the MPL Association, Bill also served as a director on the insurance research team at Corning's, where his main coverage areas were not only medical professional liability, but also commercial auto reinsurance and general liability. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jiffy. Happy to be here, and I appreciate you having me on the show today.
Great, Bill. So let's get started with you just giving us an overview of the MPL industry diversification efforts, right? Has the MPL industry tried to diversify in the past? Can you provide us some context and background color?
Absolutely, Jiffy. So to answer this, I think it's best if we go back and start at the beginning. So the MPL industry, as we know it, was created in the 1970s due to a crisis of availability. At the time, the commercial carriers dominated the market, but were losing money because of rising frequency and rising claim severity. So they pulled out of the market and left a void where the insureds had no options. So the mutuals slash bedpan companies were set up by medical and hospital societies to fill this void. But I think of these companies as special purpose vehicles that were largely designed to do one thing in one place. So if we fast forward about a decade to the mid 80s, we find ourselves with yet another crisis. But this one was a crisis of affordability and was again driven by rising frequency and severity. So at the time, the market found itself with loss ratios as high as 150%. And the only way to fix that problem is to raise prices. But then through a combination of factors such as tort reforms, improved patient safety, we saw underwriting results improve tremendously. Then as icing on the cake during the late 80s, the interest rate environment was very favorable to fixed income investors. You had 10-year treasuries throwing off 7.5% to almost 10% at that time. So as a result of all this good news, the early 90s, in particular 91 to 97, average operating results for this industry were about 67%, which meant that the industry was making $33 of pre-tax income for every $100 of premium. Well, policyholder surplus grew significantly, and companies found themselves with money to spend that they didn't have before. So companies got to thinking, if we can do this in our home state, we should be able to make even more profit if we grow into other states and other sectors. So what you saw was, for example, the New Jersey Dock Company growing into Pennsylvania hospitals. You saw the Pennsylvania Hospital Company going into New Jersey Docks, and et cetera, et cetera. So it should be noted at this time that companies were also looking to get financial ratings. Many of them had no rating at the time. They were looking to get an A rating potentially, which would allow them to diversify even more and not be 100% in their home markets.
Good, good. Thanks for that, Bill. So it sounds like start small, start local, and then expand over to other states, right?
Yes.
So how do you think those diversification efforts have worked out so far? And what have some of these companies learned from those experiences?
Well, let's keep it up until the hard market that we saw about 25 years ago. As I mentioned earlier, you saw a lot of companies diversify into markets where they had expertise. For example, doc company writing more doctors. You also had companies where they wanted to apply their MPL knowledge in other healthcare sectors, so doc company writing hospitals. However, the diversification we saw in the 90s was largely done on price. Why? Because the quickest way to burn into a market in insurance is to undercharge the competition. So that's what companies did. They also tried going after better risks. For example, claim-free doctors, certain classes like anesthesia, etc. But the incumbent companies knew those risks. They knew their markets and they knew the defense attorneys. So in many cases, the risks that came to market were a lot of times bottom feeders. They weren't the cream of the crop. So to your question on how this worked out, in a word, not so good. Industry combined ratio shot back up to the 140, 150 range. Some companies took the diversification idea too far and found themselves priced out of business. Examples of that are FICO, Frontier, a few others. Some companies just pulled out of the market, in particular St. Paul, which was the largest writer of MPL at the time. Now, for the surviving companies, a hard market set in around 2001, which lasted for about 5 years. And we saw, in some cases, persistent year-over-year double-digit price increases. This hard market, as I said, lasted until about 2006 when things settled down. So what were lessons learned? Well, one lesson is that it's very easy to grow in insurance. All you have to do is underprice the marketplace. Another lesson that is profitability is a different story. So if companies insist on underpricing business, there will be a road to Damascus moment when they realize they can't underprice forever. The third thing that came out of it is I think the industry walked away more responsible about diversification and what that should look like.
Diversify, grow into other markets, but then there was a hard market that came into play, right? So other factors are coming in. So just moving on, after the dust settled from this last hard market, how has the industry looked to diversify its core operations to get, you know, some of those costs and the loss ratios better?
Well, things settled down. That's the insurance industry. We have a crisis and then we move on. Our industry, what we saw post the hard market, companies continued to look to diversify. They just did it in a more responsible fashion. So you had companies that looked to diversify in what they knew in other states. Sometimes contiguous, sometimes across the country, but they went into the markets knowing more than they did, say, during the 90s when they just jumped into markets with both feet. There was a fair amount of M&A activity during that time. We had some companies like TDC, which made several purchases like Skippy, FIPIC, and now ProAssurance, which was the biggest news recently. ProAssurance was an acquirer of companies. I remember they bought the podiatry company about probably 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. Mag Mutual bought MD Advantage and West Virginia Mutual. So M&A activity is normal. That's normal activity in any business. Some companies went into other lines of business. ProAssurance comes to mind with the purchase of Eastern Alliance, which was a work comp, is a work comp specialty company. Mag Mutual went into commercial auto to provide coverage for healthcare auto risks. Then you have some companies going a little bit further. ISME has gotten big in the international space. Some companies are writing assumed reinsurance. They're actually acting as full-blown reinsurers for healthcare writers. NICMIC and COPIC come to mind on that. And then you have some non-insurance areas. For example, Coveris got into the risk management and consulting, as well as the education and training businesses. And Curie is in the investment advisory business.
So we went from companies vacating the markets to small mutual companies coming together, expanding, and then now you're seeing consolidation mergers and acquisitions going on. Great. So why are these companies looking to diversify today? What's changed in the today's environmental climate?
There's two big changes that have and are taking place, Jiffy. First, following the last hard market, one of the dynamics that truly benefited the industry was a drop in claim frequency. And we're talking a drop of maybe 30, 40% where the claims just went away. So at the time, the market was assuming prices that would cover a certain number of claims, but those claims didn't appear. So the pricing in hindsight was very overstated in some cases. What that led to was significant favorable loss reserve development. And what that did was ultimately it found its way into the policyholder surplus because the money wasn't needed to pay claims. So between, say, 2006 and last year, 2024, policyholder surplus for this industry went up about 200%. So you have a number of MPL companies finding themselves sitting on large amounts of surplus and looking for ways to profitably deploy the money.
Okay.
The second reason behind this is that the whole picture of healthcare is changing. So about 10 years ago, physicians represented about 60% of the MPL market as we know it in terms of written premium. Today, though, doctors only represent about 45% of the market. And this drop largely represents doctors that have gone from independent practice to becoming employees of hospitals or healthcare systems. If you think about Optum, which is a subsidiary of United Health, I believe they employ or work with one out of every 10 doctors in the country. So as a result, the doctor companies are looking for ways to grow because the exposures just aren't there in the doctor space.
Thanks, Bill. That's an interesting dynamics, right? You're sitting on a bit of cash and premium, but the market's shifting, people going more over to the hospitals. So for our last question here, what are some of the current paths MPL insurers should take in terms of diversification? And what words of caution or encouragement would you put out there for our MPL listeners?
Well, we touched on a couple of them, Jiffy. International business, assumed reinsurance, and the tried and true method of expanding into other states, but cautiously and with the right partners. Don't just jump in. There's also a few other options I'd like to touch on that companies probably want to think about. And this message is largely directed at the mutuals because by definition, the commercial companies in our space are already diversified. I think MedMal as a percentage of overall premium for commercial companies is maybe at 2%. So we're talking here really about the mutuals that are largely in MPL. So one thing they can think about doing is making structural changes. You might hear about companies setting up mutual holding companies where the mutual company converts to a stock company and the mutual holding company owns the stock and now has access to capital markets. There's also non-structural changes, which could be affiliations or strategic partnerships with other insurers that offer coverages needed by your MPL customers. Work comp, cyber, it's kind of a convenience, one-stop shopping type of approach. Now, where we are seeing growth in this space is in the other facilities, the non-hospital facilities, surgery centers, medi spas, where most care is delivered today. However, many of those risks are being written in the excess and surplus lines market. So if companies want to get into that other facility space, they should consider either setting up an excess and surplus line subsidiary or maybe partnering with an E&S company whose paper they can write on. Another interesting approach would be through an RRG. Now, RRGs have historically been used to insure a specific group of risks. For example, a group of docs that thought they might be better risks than their commercial or mutual company was charging for. So they set up an RRG to provide the insurance. Today, some companies are using RRGs as a growth vehicle. And this is because RRGs are less regulated than mutual companies and could have more flexibility in terms of pricing and coverage. And the last way I can think of is through program business. We hear talk about the MGA market and how that now exceeds over $100 billion in premium. And in order to write that business, the MGAs need partner companies. So many of these programs are written in the E&S market with a focus on property and GL. So it's not MedMal necessarily in play, but it is a way to diversify through other lines of business. So those are just some of the options that we can think of, Jiffy.
Thanks for your thoughts, Bill. I think we have just scratched the surface on the topic of the MPL diversification. much less where the MPL industry is going altogether. So hopefully we can have you again on the program to see what additional programs have been made or progress has been made. We'll work on that. But in the meantime, thank you so much for appearing on today's program and for sharing your valuable insights, Bill.
Jiffy, the pleasure is mine. Thank you again for having me.
And to our listeners, as always, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. We love hearing from you. So if you have any comments or would like to follow us on social media, please reach out to us and our channels. And obviously, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We've got so much more coming. So stay tuned to our Sapiens Insurance 360 podcast. Bye now.